Blog Talk Radio.
For hope. Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson, and that clip you just heard was obviously from Man of Steel. Did you really think we were going to be talking about a whole lot of other movies this week? Of course not. It is Man of Steel week here, and this is an interesting film for me. Everybody knows that I've always been sort of a comic book guy, but I'm more of a Marvel fan, and I always have been. And Superman is probably my least favorite character of all time. I'm not afraid to say that. He is my least favorite character of all time. And, you know, so I've been a little skeptical about this film in particular, you know, for a variety of reasons, beyond the fact that it's Superman. Zack Snyder is a director that I generally like, but I understand he's got a lot of technical issues that can get in the way. And, you know, and Warner Brothers has not been particularly good in launching their superhero franchises, with the exception of, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy. So I approach this from a different angle than I think a lot of other people do. But obviously we're going to be talking about Man of Steel a lot today. And I think on Monday I'm going to bring in some of my other uber nerd friends to kind of discuss the future of Warner Brothers superhero movies in the wake of Man of Steel. And I'm hoping to have my friend Brendan Connolly of Bleeding Cool to talk about that. But that's for a couple of days from now. Right now, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to bring in two of my favorite ladies to talk about Man of Steel. And one of those is my good friend Molly Dedham. Hello, Molly.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to talking about Man of Steel.
Good, because we're gonna spend the whole time talking about Man of Steel. So we'll get into that in just a second. But I also want to introduce my other lady friend, Leslie Combamel, the Cinema Siren. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm great, thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Now, Leslie, I know is a big fan of Superman. She's like the polar opposite for me. I saw her the other day, and she was actually dressed as Supergirl. So,
yes, I was guilty as charged.
Yes, you were dressed as Supergirl. So I know you're a fan of the whole Superman family. So I'm interested in getting your perspective on this movie, because you come at it from a different angle than me. But Superman, Man of Steel, to me, the thing that they needed to do for Superman was to not give me the same old story that I've seen over and over again. I've seen that Superman origin to death, you know, and they needed to give us a fresh perspective on it. And I think what they did was that they did very smart was really get us into the politics of Krypton in the beginning. The movie starts off on the planet Krypton, which we know what's going to happen to it, but we get a deeper look at the reasons why it happens. and we're introduced to Jor-El and his wife Lara, who have given birth to Kal-El, the first natural birth on Krypton in centuries, just as the planet is on the verge of being destroyed. At the same time, you have General Zod, played by Michael Shannon, who is attempting a coup in order to help keep his race alive. Ironically, he wants to do that by killing everybody, but, you know, there's the conundrum. Rather than letting the child stay on the planet that is doomed, they fire him off in a rocket to Earth, where he crash lands in Smallville, and we take it from there. From that point on, we jump right into Clark Kent as an adult who is kind of trying to find his way. He's an alien in a strange land, and he's trying to deal with who he's meant to be as a person. To me, those are the most interesting aspects of this movie. I've always wanted to see the kind of the dark corners of Superman. I wanted to see the flaws, the fractures, the elements of him that make him human and not just basically a god on Earth. And I think they do that aspect of the story well. But there's a lot more to the story than just that. But I want to get your initial impressions first, Molly, about Man of Steel. Do you think Warner Brothers has a hit on their hands, or is this kind of another misstep for them?
I think they probably do have a hit, but I can't really gauge that because I was completely disappointed in Superman.
Mm.
I had very high expectations, and I found this film to not be anything what I thought it could be. I think it had good moments, but I still think it's going to do well. I think that they made a film based on these focus groups, and they make films now globally to impress audiences around the world. They're definitely going to do that. They're going to make money. But I think as far as critics go, I think it's going to be like, you know, Congress right now. It's going to be the Democrats and the Republicans. And I personally was disappointed in Superman.
What aspect of it did you particularly not like about it? Did you not like the development of Clark Kent as a person? Did you not like the action by Zack Snyder? Which part of it did you not like?
Well, I felt like the special effects and the CGI were so overwhelming that they shoved it down your throat, so you missed all these great little moments. And I felt like the great moments of the film, like Kevin Costner and Diane Lane playing the parents, I thought they were wonderful, but there wasn't enough of that. It was just so overwhelming and relentless with these special effects, which, by the way, moved so fast that I can't even tell if they were good. Because to me, it was just blowing pulverization of buildings, and then again, it's moving fast again. I was completely disappointed. You know, I always go back to Prometheus this year with Ridley Scott and those special effects, where they took their time, and you saw that they were really thoughtful about art direction. I didn't get any of that. And I kind of walked out going, what happened to Superman in this movie? And talk about chronology. They blew their wad in the beginning with Zod and Lois Lane to the point where I wasn't excited or even looking forward to seeing them.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Lois Lane in a little bit and the action. But Leslie, what are your thoughts on Man of Steel? Do you feel the same way?
I do not. But, you know, I liked the balance. I mean, I do think that the special effects were a little over the top, but it's Zack Snyder, and he's battle porn specialist, so that's not that surprising. And you kind of know what you're going to get when you're walking into a Zack Snyder movie in that respect. I mean, he even turned animated owls into battle porn specialists, so it's not that surprising there. But on the other hand, I thought that the cast overall was so showing of their talent, and there were moments where they really revealed little quirks in their personalities. And for the amount of special effect and action that was in this movie, I was really surprised at how well developed and how well acted the characters were that were secondary. And I loved Henry Cavill, and I thought he made Superman very, much more complicated and nuanced. And I think that's a pretty major part of why I enjoyed the movie. But I didn't I didn't walk in with any particular expectation one way or the other, except that I love Superman and I'm really sick of Superman being, you know, I think there's these two camps of they want the lighthearted, joyful,
right.
Nothing bothers me, water off my back.
There's nothing joyful about this movie. It's very dark.
It's very dark. And I think even though you're talking about Superman, you wanting to see his human side, for me, I wanted to see, I know he's an alien, I know he looks like humans, but what is the struggle for being an alien that has very little in common other than what he looks like and trying to fit in and not even knowing that he's an alien and finding that out, you know, all the things that are about the origin story, but making it more about his struggle with accepting who he is and his relationships and what they mean to him between his real parents and his adoptive parents, and that was much more complicated, and his own inner struggle about his morality and what that means and what he can or can't do, what he feels okay with doing, how he wants to be accepted, all of that I thought was very interesting, and I thought Henry Cavill did a great job, so I loved it. There are some flaws to it. I'm not saying couldn't have been better, but at the same time, I really enjoyed it. I'm going back to see it tonight. I thought it was great.
Nice.
Even as a critic, that was kind of, I'm not looking for flaws in it, but expected it, you know, Zack Snyder's spotty. He's not always great, you know, he's not always doing a great, he has a very particular aesthetic, and sometimes I find it to be way over the top, and I did find the action sequences repetitive, but at the same time,
right.
I feel like there, in some respects, it needed to be that way in order to get to the ultimate conclusion, which we can't speak about. It needed to be over the top, so I see the reason why they did it that way. It just could have been, as Molly was saying, the art direction could have been a little bit more interesting, complicated, diverse.
Well, going back to Snyder, I mean, the thing with him is a lot of people call him a great action director. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what he's very good at is staging really big action, huge, wide-scale action, but he's not necessarily the most creative director in the world. I turn back to a movie like Sucker Punch from a couple years ago. And it has
God.
Really, well, I know you don't like it. I'm kind of in the middle of the road on it. But he has these really vibrant-looking scenes in it, and really great, well-staged scenes. And they're all just sort of flat. And I kind of felt like that happened here after a while. Now, it does not happen, I don't think, in the very first battle, which I think is just phenomenal. And it features Superman battling Feora and the 8-foot guy named Namek. And the fight kind of goes from Smallville all the way to Metropolis. And it's this fantastically well-choreographed fight that shows us everything that's great about Superman. I mean, you get the aggressive Superman, you get the staunch defender Superman. He's trying to protect the human military while trying to battle these two Kryptonians. You see everything about him that's great in that scene. And it's not too long. You get some great interplay between him and Zod as well in it. And I thought that was like the highlight for me in terms of action. And then you have this finale, which is like 15 minute slugfest, and basically it's like one toppled skyscraper after another. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And I felt like I had seen it to death after like 5 minutes, and it just kind of kept going on to the point where it lost its impact. I mean, it's a big deal to watch this entire city get leveled, but they made it so that it wasn't really a big deal. You know what I mean?
That's the problem.
And
is, yeah. I mean, I'm going back to Zack Snyder is not creative. He is he's sort of a one-note action guy. And we have learned through Christopher Nolan, as an auteur blockbuster filmmaker, that you can actually make action films and make them interesting. You can make them creative, and you can have character plot. And that's what happened with Batman. And so my expectation of Christopher Nolan overlooking this, I was going to get some of that. I thought Superman was completely bland. You know, it didn't feel dark. It felt bland and boring at times, where you can take an actor and he's so interesting and he does very little. He says very little dialogue, but yet there's so much going on there. I never got that with Superman. I still think Henry Cavill is a really interesting actor, and I think he's right for the role. But his talents were completely... He's a talented actor, and they weren't really showcased in this movie. And maybe that's the direction they wanted to go to, but I didn't find it interesting at all.
Hmm.
Not memorable.
Leslie?
That's for sure. Well,
I like the dueling personalities there, so I'm just going
to go back and forth. And, you know, I was going to say, this movie is really erupting a fandom civil war. It's totally true, because
we
were on Facebook last night, all of us talking about this. I mean, I see where she's coming from about it. I don't see it as bland, but I think, I think that Zack Snyder... I agree that there could have been much more depth to it, but I think it's one of those weird things where do you find the balance of that between the action and the people? You know, it does somewhat, in terms of the focus groups and people and building it that way, it does come down to trying to play to people who want really big action pieces, set pieces of action. And so how do you balance that with the mythology of the character and who he really is and building a fandom for that particular incarnation? But I feel like it did it for me. It did it. Now, I have said already that I have been a fan of Henry Cavill since Count of Monte Cristo, wanting him to become successful because I do see that he's really good. I think that I guess I got enough with I would have wanted a lot more with Lois Lane interaction and with Perry White for sure. That he was underused in a major way.
But there was so much
for Russell Crowe. So much. He did more than I was expecting. And I really didn't expect him to be, you know, such an important part of the movie. And
he
I loved that.
He is a constant presence. He's a constant presence throughout. And I would say Kevin Costner is too. Even when they're not on screen, the impact of their performances kind of looms over everything, which I think is one of the better aspects of it. I love that. I love the pulling parenting styles that have helped make him so disillusioned. I mean, you have Russell Crowe's Jor-El, who kind of wants him to take the proactive stance in being this symbol for the people. And then you have Kevin Costner as Pa Kent, Jonathan Kent, who basically wants him to kind of pull back. And then you have Diane Lane, who's kind of a cheerleader in a sense. I mean, she wants him to live his life and do his thing. And all these things are pulling at him in different directions. And I found that interesting. I mean, it's not something we've really had a chance to see cinematically. And I've read this story in comics in various forms over the last few years. But on the big screen, it's not something we've really had a chance to see. Certainly Superman Returns didn't do it. I mean, that was just a total fail, in my opinion, just about every way. But this film gives us different looks at Superman that we've yet to see. And I think what one of the things that really interested me about it was that it explored the idea of Superman to everybody else, not just him, but what he means to other people, what his arrival means. It's how does living in a world where a guy like Superman exists affect people of faith? I mean, I think that is something that we see that mostly in the Jonathan Kent character. You know, he's a religious sort, and everything he knew is kind of thrown out the window with the arrival of this alien who can shoot heat rays from his eyes. You know, it's stuff like that is interesting to me. Now, they didn't go overboard in talking about that, but the fact that it's even out there, to me, I enjoy that they went there. So, I mean, there are a lot of little things to me that this movie succeeds in.
You know, I think here's another thing that I felt, and obviously you don't want to give too much away because people are listening to the show and you don't want spoiler alerts.
Yep.
So I'm going to talk a little in code to the two of you, but there was an actual scene towards the beginning of the movie where we start to get to know Superman, but at this point it's not Superman. And it's the scene where you see it in the trailer where he's out on the boat.
Yep, the fishing boat.
And at one point there's this big scene, and I honestly felt without giving too much away, that it actually was kind of cheesy. It almost was kind of cheesy. And the way he, and I thought, did I just see what I'm seeing? And I thought, that was such a mistake. And I have to compare it to Batman. Because with Batman, the last two Batmans, the last three Batmans, but mostly the last two, there wasn't anything about that movie that was cheesy. It was flawless in ways that made it completely different. And I think I'm approaching it from someone that doesn't come from the comic book world and doesn't know origin stories or comes from a fandom point of view, because it's totally different. Your world is so much more inside, and it goes back years and years. But if you're just talking about people that love cinema and are now appreciating what Nolan did with this blockbuster, I think that, look, I want to tell you both, I'm going to see this movie again, and I'm definitely recommending people go see the movie. But it was just, there were so many things I think that they got wrong, and that it could have been so much better. But it still, overall, took a lot of precision and talent to do a movie like this. I'm not saying that Zack Snyder isn't talented, but I think it was the wrong choice for the film. I think that he was not the right director for this film.
I would say that there are times where it feels like he's using the same technique in shooting the quieter moments as he is in shooting the action moments, which is a mistake. Because it's his camera doesn't ever want to settle down. But in terms of the comparisons, you talked about the Batman movies, Nolan's Batman movies. I would say comparing it to the last two Batman movies is a mistake. And I know a lot of people have been doing that. But I think if you look back at Batman Begins, Batman Begins has more than its share of issues as well, just as this one does. Batman Begins is a good movie, in the same way that I think this is a good movie. And they all have some of the same elements that I think are that don't quite work. And those are kind of the pitfalls of doing origin stories. You know, how do you balance the needs of the fans, of the old fans, with the needs of people who are just coming to this for the first time? And I think both movies are kind of trying to walk that line. And in some ways they succeed, in some ways they don't. But I look at this and Batman Begins as being very much on an even plane. Now, the Dark Knight trilogy improves over time dramatically. The next two movies, and I'm hoping that this one does as well. Leslie, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think also, just in terms of coming from the perception of someone who loves Superman and loves his story and what he represents, which is hope and optimism, which is very, very different from Batman, even though there's still struggle there. We are talking about the difference between, not to get geeky, between someone who utilizes technology and someone who is the superpower himself. So it would be difficult in terms of her talking about, Molly talking about cheesy scenes. When you're talking about Superman and what he can do versus Batman and what he can do, Batman uses technology. Superman is using his physical body. So it's really kind of
going to
be hard.
And that's a good point. But
it's
going
to be hard to show those scenes.
But that, there's this one scene in the movie where it looked, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, even for Zack Snyder, who does action scenes well, I didn't believe it for a second. I didn't buy it for a second. I wasn't, there was nothing impressive
about it. Do you think it was about how he was, we hadn't had yet enough integration of his, of what he could or did? Yeah, because I think the other thing about this movie is that we're going along with Superman while he figures out what the hell he can do, because he doesn't know. He's figuring it out. And so we're supposed to be kind of going along with him in his journey to figure out, well, okay, and the other thing is he never knows whether something's going to kill him or not, because he doesn't know what he can do. So he, as a moral figure, is constantly testing himself because he has to, because it's so important to him to stand for what he is and who he is, that he's going to take a risk that might kill him, and he doesn't know whether he's going to be able to do it or not, and he does it anyway. And that's the part of it that I find exciting.
You brought up a very good point. You said Superman doesn't know his powers. And if you go back to 1978, that scene when he's a kid and he lifts the car up, remember that scene?
Mm-hmm.
The entire That was one of the best scenes in the film. We were completely, and here's a little boy just lifting up a car. That scene in 1978 with no special effects, except obviously the boy, or the little boy that small can't lift a car, had so much more impact on the idea that you just touched on than Cavill in that scene during the boat. It had
but
no
do you,
effect.
But do you think the scene with the school bus, which I think is probably what they're trying to compare, trying to do the same thing with that scene, the school bus scene, do you think
it
that
was a
scene
bit better,
did?
But it was that was better than the scene off the boat, but it still wasn't like, it missed something. In other words, it's almost like Zack Snyder gave us everything in the beginning. There was no element of surprise. There was no building to anything.
But couldn't
something
that
was
be
completely
because
missing?
Couldn't that be because in this particular incarnation of the story and Superman, that he already knows that he's different and that he can do things he's not supposed to be able to do. And so it's not about surprise for him. It's about just doing it anyway. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I understand. But as an audience person, you as an audience person have to have – you have to be in – what's so great about those stories is finding this little kid that has these powers he doesn't know he has, and all of a sudden he's doing these things. That is so exciting. There's a fantasy in that. And I just wasn't moved by those scenes like I should have been.
Okay,
they just come across as benign.
Right. I mean, if you're talking about us sort of playing out our own fantasy of wanting to be a superhero in that way – I don't think that's in this movie. That definitely, I don't think it. So if people walk in,
I would disagree to an extent with that. I kind of got that feeling from the scenes where he's the flying scenes, which I thought were just spectacular. And I love flying scenes.
Those were all right, yeah.
Oh, those are great. And you kind of get the awe and the excitement of him discovering that he has this ability to do that, coupled with Snyder's usual visual flourishes, the sonic booms and things like that. I thought those were spectacular. I felt like we could have used a little bit more of him learning to discover his abilities.
Yeah,
I would have liked
definitely.
To have seen that. In fact, David Goyer, who wrote the script, talked about there's some scenes that got cut out, including one where he's a child, and I think he's beginning to discover his X-ray, not his X-ray vision, but his heat vision and things like that. I would have liked to have seen more of that stuff.
You know, I'll tell you. You know what I would like?
There's another
action scene
that they cut out too. There's another action scene that they cut out where the Kryptonians destroyed Shanghai or something like that. And then I'm thankful that they left that out because they did not need to add any more sequences like that in the movie because there's plenty of action.
You know who I think would have been a great director? It would be David Yates.
You think?
Oh well, yeah.
I think David Yates would have been a much better director for Superman. Even Sam Mendes would have been better. Zack Snyder is good at one thing, and I think that we have turned certain blockbusters and sci-fi action films, they've become more sophisticated. And yes, there was this is not by any means, and you can have it all now in these types of films. You don't just take it for what it is. It's escapist movie watching. And this is what I just didn't quite get with Superman. I'll tell you, the best part of Superman is I'm ready for the sequel because at the end of the film, to me, is where the movie should start.
Right. And I think that scene, and I've had a lot of discussions with people about the final moments of the scene, which I won't give away, of course. But Superman takes an action that I think a lot of people were surprised by. And to me, that scene is important because it establishes that this is not going to be your average everyday Boy Scout Superman. I mean, it's not going to be the one that we've come to expect, we've come to know. It's going to be a little bit different, and that's essentially what I think this movie was trying to build up from the very beginning, that this is not your usual Superman. I think that was their goal from minute one, and that scene kind of culminated in that perfectly. So I was happy about that decision that they make. You talk about Snyder, he'll be coming back to do the sequel. So if you don't like him now, I'm sorry.
Well, maybe he can activate a little more of his auteur nature. You know, maybe he can embrace.
They seem to want him for Justice League also. I mean, it seems like Warner Brothers really loves Zack Snyder right now. So it seems like he's going to be doing a lot of these movies As for David Yates, I mean, he's a Warner Brothers guy too. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you see him do another superhero movie. Or maybe he'll do the third movie. Who knows?
If you're talking Sam Mendes and David Yates, they are more auteur, for sure, than Zack Snyder. But I think that he has a lot of talents that he hasn't honed yet. I mean, I'm optimistic about it. But I do want to touch on one thing that we haven't talked that much about, and that is the father figure, having the two fathers in it. You know, I can't remember too many movies that have had two such positive father figures in one movie. I love that about it. I just really do.
Right, that's true. That's true.
Don't
when they're not against
that
each other, yeah.
That's
and
true.
Although we do learn
a little bit about Jor-El that makes him not quite as altruistic as he may have seemed. I mean,
it's not a matter of altruism. I'm talking about being a good dad.
I think they're both really good dads.
Really good, like, awesome, exemplary fathers. And
we haven't seen that since the show My Two Dads
in
the 1980s. We haven't seen that since My Two Dads in the 1980s.
Three men and a baby, yeah. There are other ones,
yeah.
But they're not superhero movies.
No, you're right, Leslie. You make a good point. You're right. It's here you have two father figures, and they're both exemplary. They're both ideal, and they're not against each other. You don't have the two opposites, a protagonist and an antagonist, good dad, bad dad. You have two extraordinary fathers coming from, and they have the same belief system about their son and what they want for him, but, you know, one is from a planet and one is from another planet, per se. And I think you're right. You haven't really seen that in a movie. I certainly haven't.
I wish they could have brought some of that to Lois Lane's character, who I think is severely underwritten in this film. As much as I like Amy Adams,
yeah.
I think she brings all of the traits of Lois Lane that you expect. She's the intrepid reporter. She's tough. She's fearless. She'll do anything for her story. But her character just has nothing to do in this movie, really. And I feel like they were kind of saving her for the sequel. Like, we'll see more of her next film. But right now, she just kind of felt like window dressing to me. What did you guys think about the way Amy Adams was handled the Lois Lane character? I'll start with you, Leslie.
I think that it was, you know, I had heard a little bit about this before I went to see the movie, and I was trying not to kind of buy into it one way or the other. I was really surprised at how badass she is, you know, because because I had heard that she wound up, you know, people were saying she wound up kind of as a damsel in distress, which is absolutely not true.
She's not a damsel in distress.
She's underwritten for sure. And you can tell there's a lot more to her. And, you know, Amy Adams is a great actress, and she can really do some subtext like nobody's business. So I feel like I know her just by how well Amy Adams plays her. But at the same time, she's underwritten, and it would have been nice to know, you know, why would Superman fall for her? I'm not saying he does in this movie. I'm just saying, like, in the story of Superman,
right,
eventually he's supposed to fall for her. We need to know why he falls for her. You know, that's what I need to know. And I'm hoping that story shows up at some point.
Molly?
I liked Amy Adams. I think she's perfectly cast, but I agree with you. And again, it goes back to the filmmakers behind the film. I think that having her, I think her discovering Superman so soon was a mistake.
Mm.
We like the idea that they don't quite know who each other, you know, it's this figuring out, it's the building, it's the mystery. And she finds out too soon, and it's like, okay, now she's on his side.
I like that dynamic. I like that change in the dynamic. I that's one of those hokey elements that I actually was hoping they would jettison. And you know, the whole, hey, who is he? You know, I didn't want to see that. I didn't want to see that this time. I wanted to see something different from them. I want to see a different angle taken on it. And I think it changes the nature of their relationship for the next movie. I mean, go ahead.
Breaking down the fourth wall, though, I do want to bring up, and Leslie, you'll probably be able to speak to this, is how hot Henry Cavill is. I mean, my God. I mean, forget
about
it.
It was
say,
in my review.
Okay, forget about breaking down a character analysis. That guy is hot as, can I cuss? No. I mean, he
yes,
is,
my
he is hot as shit.
Okay.
Okay, it's like, can we just call him Super Dick? Because, my God, the man is so attractive. It doesn't even matter what he could do. He just looks good.
It's just absolutely crazy that they took my body and put it in that movie.
He did that without
my say-so. I just don't think it's fair. I'm waiting for my
reaction. I honestly believe he is in this movie, no hyperbole, and this is in my review. I think he is the most beautiful man I have ever seen in my entire life, ever, in this movie. That is how good looking he is.
I agree with you, and I like skinny Jewish guys. He is so beautiful and gorgeous, and he's also British. It's not like he's got some cheesy California accent. He even has that sort of, you know, he comes from a place that seems kind of dark and far away. I think he's dreamy. I think he's totally dreamy. And I'd like to see
that,
a sex scene between him and I think he and Lois Lane need to have a sex scene in the next movie.
I guess you guys have never seen Mallrats, otherwise you'd know what would happen if they tried to have sex. Anyway, I think that's about as good a place to wrap up this conversation as any. But it sounds like Leslie and I both really like the movie. Molly, it sounds like you like it, but not nearly as much as we did. Sounds like you got a few more issues than us, but I think we all can recommend it for this weekend. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So we've spent the last 30 minutes talking Man of Steel. I think that's pretty good. ladies, I appreciate you both coming on here. It's been a lot of fun, and I need to have you both back on again because that was terrific for me. So
thank you
for joining. All right, I will talk to you guys very soon.
Oh, happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day. Bye, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Later, ladies. All right. That was Molly Dedham and Leslie Combamale joining me to talk about Man of Steel. That was great. I do need to do that more often, have both ladies on here talking about anything, because they both come from different perspectives, and they're obviously coming at it from a different angle than I am. So that was a lot of fun. All right. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. I'm going to give you my brief thoughts on This is the End, and then we're going to go into DVDs and start getting you ready for the weekend. So we'll be right back. Bottles of water, 56 beers, 2 vodkas, 4 whiskey, 6 bottles of wine, tequila, Nutella, cheese, steaks, a Milky Way, 1/2 ounce sour diesel, 3.5 grams Grandmaster Kush, 1 ounce of shrooms, 15 pills of ecstasy, a porno mag, a baseball bat, and the video camera from the movie 27
Hours. 127
Hours. 127 Hours, and a functioning revolver from the movie Flyboys.
Old Faithful. Jesus. Thing's real. No, I kept this from the movie.
Yeah,
this is an actual revolver.
I see. Yeah.
Frank, that was very uncomfortable. Yeah. Could you put that down?
Loaded?
Love it. Awesome. Love it. Can you just
I always keep my props.
That's really cool.
Always keep my props. I know how to handle it.
He knows what he's doing. I like this bit. I like it. I get it. You know, see?
It's real. It's heavy.
Come on, guys.
Careful.
Bang,
no.
Bang.
Jesus, please put it down.
Bang, bang, bang. You're dead.
Pow.
Stop. Guys, stop fucking with the gun.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. I'll just kill myself.
No, don't do that.
Jesus.
I know.
Donut,
I
give it back.
Don't
do that.
Donut. I'm sorry.
Look, just because a bunch of people fell into a hole outside doesn't mean we can't have some fun. We're a bunch of best friends hanging out. It's like a sleepover.
Oh, my God. That is a clip from This Is the End. And that last line there at the end by Jonah Hill is just so sums up how terrific this movie is. We're all a bunch of friends just hanging out. And that's kind of how this movie feels. It feels like a bunch of good friends hanging out together and somebody set up a video camera in the middle of the room. Obviously, this is the film that stars Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, James Franco, Jay Baruchel, Danny McBride, Craig Robinson, and practically everybody else who has ever passed through a Judd Apatow film shows up in here. And this is far and away the weirdest, wildest, and most fun movie I've seen all year. It is undoubtedly the funniest film I've seen all year, too. And basically, it's because they do such a damn good job of playing up to every character's public personas. Basically, you have all these people playing versions of themselves trapped in James Franco's house while the apocalypse is going on outside. We see Jay Baruchel and Seth Rogen, who are best friends, and they're kind of in the midst of, and they're kind of growing apart, and they come to this party at Franco's house, and shortly thereafter, a huge earthquake happens. A whole rack of celebrities get killed, and then you have these six guys who are stuck in this house together. And what happens is basically what's going on in the house is far more aggravating and probably more dangerous than what's going on outside. I mean, you have Danny McBride, who is clearly maniacal and deranged, just totally unhinged. You have Rogan, who's the guy everybody loves. Jay Baruchel, who's like nobody knows who he is. Jonah Hill, who's just too nice. I mean, it's just all these little quirks there. You have Franco, who's playing up the perception that he's kind of pretentious and self-obsessed. But they're all self-obsessed in some ways. I mean, you heard that in that clip. Franco still keeps the gun from Flyboys. I mean, who thinks about Flyboys? Who remembers Flyboys? He has a camera from 127 hours. And then the funny part is that Rogan doesn't even know what the movie is. I mean, all these little things converge to make for what is a truly, truly hilarious experience. You have Emma Watson, who shows up in the film, playing herself, of course. I think that role was initially going to be for Daniel Radcliffe, and he turned it down. But I'm glad it went to her, because it's good to see her in that sort of role, joining all these guys. And the movie, it's one hilarious gag after another that's occasionally sacrilegious. It deals very heavily in religion at times, because we are talking about the rapture here. It's only on a few occasions where I think the story kind of runs in place. I mean, yeah, you get these guys together and they're funny and they're shooting cheap versions of Pineapple Express and arguing over Milky Way bars and things like that. And that stuff is just terrific. And then you get some moments where it feels like they're just kind of passing time. And it's during those moments where you can feel them stretching for humor. And they start talking. They start making a lot of rape jokes, which aren't really all that funny at all. And they kind of come out of nowhere. They kind of don't really mix with the tone of the film. But overall, man, this movie is about as hilarious and quotable as a film as you're going to find. I think it is far and away the funniest movie that's come out this year. And if it wasn't for Man of Steel, I mean, this would be the movie to see this weekend. As it stands right now, I would say go see them both back-to-back. Go, just take your Saturday and go see Man of Steel and This Is the End back-to-back. You will not be disappointed. Man of Steel is dark. This Is the End is just the polar opposite. It is just wacky and just a lot of fun. So definitely go see This Is the End. You will not regret it. All right, we're going to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back, and I'm going to start talking DVDs. There's a shit ton of news that came out this week. We're going to breeze right through it, get you ready for the weekend, and then we're going to get out of here. We'll be right back.
can I get a level on the bass and on the treble? Putting up and down like a UNLV rebel. The amp of the ambitious, what we really dig acoustic. Can't be too much slacking, not too much backing. You must contain the neck, at least to dip your hips in that. Your feet will be infectious, so at least realize the fact. The rhythms are inserted and the nerves can be converted. This ain't rock and roll, cause the rap is in control. If you're a mega star, will you buy you a car? I'd rather go get footing, footprints I will be putting all over the earth if we can get there first. Now that we are in it, footprints will be a printed. So if you recognize them, you can try to size them. They'll probably be the ones with the size time flying all over the field. You won't have to yield. If you want protection, you can hop behind a shield.
All right, that is some Tribe Called Quest for you. As good a way as any to enter the final segment of this show. Let's talk about what's coming out on DVD next Tuesday. This will be June 18th. Guys, the year is going by so fast. In a couple of weeks, we'll be doing my... I do this show every year. It's the halfway point. I do the best movies of the year so far show. If you listen to the Punch Drunk podcast on Sundays... It's on Sundays now, anyway. We always do that show, and it's kind of my one of my favorite things. It's always my favorite show of the year, and we're going to do that on here next Friday. Not next Friday, but in a couple weeks. We're going to do the best movies of the year so far, and I'm going to bring in a few of my colleagues for that. But coming up this Tuesday on DVD, a lot of choices to choose from. Not all of them great. Jack the Giant Slayer is probably the main one. This is the film from Bryan Singer. This movie just totally bombed. I think it cost a couple people their jobs as well. This stars Nicholas Holt, and it's a version of the fairy tale character. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it, and I guess bland is the best way to put it. I mean, this movie had a lot of production issues. You might remember a trailer came out for it long before it ever released, and it did so bad, like the reaction was so bad that they bumped the movie, pushed it back until early this year, and we see why. I mean, the movie was just nothing. It was a big fat nothing burger. Quartet comes out on DVD. This was a charming little film. I saw it last year's Virginia Film Festival. Stars Maggie Smith and Billy Connolly and some others. As a group of a singing quartet who are now living in a retirement home for entertainment, for entertainers. And it's a charming little film. I think it's worth checking out. If you like British comedies, it's definitely worth checking out. Stoker, this is the latest film from Park Chan-wook, his English language debut. One of the movies I was most anticipating for this year, and this was kind of a disappointment, actually, stars Nicole Kidman, Mia Wasikowska, and Matthew Good. And I just kind of remember it being all over the place. Tonally, it was a mess. Did it want to be dark? Did it want to be funny? Was it going for like an Addams Family sort of thing? None of it seemed to work, though. So this was a big disappointment for me. And yet, there's still this part of me that thinks I should buy it just because I'm such a fan of Park Chan-wook, and I feel like if I watch it again, I'll see something in it that I missed last time. So I don't know. That's something I'm going to be thinking about before Tuesday. Movie 43, this is probably the most embarrassing movie of the year. This one stars practically everybody on the planet. It's one of those sketch comedies, kind of like Kentucky Fried Movie, I guess. And this one is just raunchy and over the top and just maddeningly unfunny. I mean, it is just crazy how unfunny this movie is. Yeah, there are a couple of decent jokes in there. The Terrence Howard basketball clip is actually pretty hilarious, where he's leading a team of an all-black basketball team against an all-white basketball team, and basically his motivation is they're white, just go crush them. It's kind of funny. It's so stupid that it's funny. But overall, that movie is just completely worth avoiding. 21 and Over, this was the teen version of The Hangover, basically. You can probably pass that one over. The Last Exorcism 2, I actually talked to Ashley Bell about this movie on the show, one of our very first episodes. And she is great, again, as she was in the first movie, which probably shouldn't have been titled The Last Exorcism because, I mean, obviously it wasn't. the sequel was not nearly as effective as the first one was, even if she was still great. And then there's The Brass Teapot, which is a movie that stars Juno Temple and Michael Angarano as a poor couple who discover a magic teapot that spews out money the more violence you commit. It's a clever concept. The movie doesn't work out quite as well as the premise promises, but the two stars are terrific. You can listen to my review of this. If you go back a little bit, look up the Snap Judgments movies, my Snap Judgments reviews on this site. You can listen to my review of that there. But it's probably worth a rental, I would say. And all these movies you can find at punchdrunkcritics.com. Just click on the shop button. You will get the best deals anywhere on the internet. That, I promise you. That is the truth. All right. So, a lot of news happened this week. And we're just going to kind of breeze through these things. But there's some big stuff going on here. You heard us talking about Man of Steel earlier and talking about the future of it. Warner Brothers has already confirmed the sequel, Man of Steel 2. They're putting it on the fast track, which means they're going to be getting it started really quickly. Zack Snyder's coming back to direct it, and David Goyer will be writing the script. So Man of Steel 2 is happening. I think it made $21 million on Thursday night alone, midnight showings. That is phenomenal. I think it's poised to get probably over $100 million this weekend. Mel Gibson is going to be the villain in The Expendables 3. Wow. It seems like pretty much that's all he can do now is play bad guys, because he's playing the villain in Robert Rodriguez's Machete Kills. So this is what happens when your public persona is that you're an anti-Semitic, domestic abusing racist. So this is the kind of roles you get. It's kind of sad, you know, to see Gibson fall off this way, but at least he's still getting work, right? You know? Marvel wants Aaron Johnson to play Quicksilver in The Avengers 2. Aaron Johnson, you know, the star of another Marvel movie, Kick-Ass, is being targeted for the role of Pietro Maximoff in Joss Whedon's film. You know, this is the main thing about this, and I may have talked about this on the Sunday show. I feel like there's some backbiting going on between Marvel and 20th Century Fox. You know that they are capable of using both the Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch characters. Both studios are. And Bryan Singer basically came up with the idea of using Quicksilver at the last second, only after he heard that Joss Whedon wanted to use him for the Avengers 2. You know, it's like, okay, you know, that's kind of, you know, passive aggressive, but whatever. And now Marvel seems to be retaliating a little bit by wanting to cast Aaron Johnson, who is very close to Matthew Vaughn, you know, because of Kick-Ass. Matthew Vaughn is producing, you know, Marvel, Fox's X-Men movies. So it's like they're going back and forth here or something. And then I think in the future we're going to see something blow up between those two. I call it a hunch. But right now it looks like Johnson may be getting a Quicksilver role, which is a good idea because he's a young actor, he's talented, he's currently filming Godzilla. It's a good role for him. And if they pair him up with Saoirse Ronan as the Scarlet Witch, as some are saying, then that's a pretty good duo, one that has a lot of potential. Megan Fox was rumored to be joining Transformers 4. There was a screw-up over at the Paramount Instagram site where they hashtagged a photo with Megan Fox. They hashtagged it Megan Fox, which had people speculating that she was going to be in the movie. Michael Bay fired back on Twitter by reposting a story from back in April in which he said Megan Fox won't be in Transformers 4. But we have no real reason to trust Bay on this. I mean, you might remember that he said that Mark Wahlberg wasn't going to be in Transformers 4 either. And that was like a day before Mark Wahlberg signed on to star in the movie. So I was like, why do we trust you? Why trust you? So I don't, personally. I think that Megan Fox will make a cameo in Transformers 4. So that's my opinion. We'll see what actually happens. John Chu is coming back to direct G.I. Joe 3. A rumor emerged that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is going to have the Vulture and introduce the Sinister Six. The role of the Vulture would be played by Colm Feore, who is already in the film, and we've seen images of him hovering around the Ravencroft Institute. And, you know, his character has been sort of unknown, though. So, I mean, this kind of... He certainly has the look to play the Vulture. And you might remember a year ago, a rumor emerged that the Sinister Six would be in this movie, setting up their run in the third film, where they would be the major threats. You think about all the villains that are in this movie right now. You have Rhino, you have Electro, you have the Green Goblin. You have all these characters in there. And basically, you've already kind of got it set up, you know? They're already there. So it wouldn't take that much work for them to do it. So I wouldn't be surprised if this turns out to be true. We see the Vulture in this film, and we see the beginnings of the Sinister Six forming. I think that's actually what's going to happen. Doctor Who's Karen Gillan is rumored to be playing Angela in Guardians of the Galaxy. This just totally blew my mind when this story came out. Angela is a character created by my favorite author, Neil Gaiman. And he created her for Todd McFarlane's Spawn comic. Now, Spawn obviously is not a Marvel comic, but a recent lawsuit was won by Gaiman, granting him full rights to the Angela character. So now he can take her anywhere he wants, and he's taken her to Marvel. Angela is going to be appearing in Marvel Comics in the Guardians of the Galaxy comic book. So it makes sense. It kind of makes sense to have the intergalactic bounty hunter. Well, she was a heavenly bounty hunter in the Spawn comic. She'll probably be an intergalactic bounty hunter in Guardians of the Galaxy. So it makes sense for that to happen. I wouldn't be surprised by it. There's been no confirmation, but this seems legit to me. This seems legit that Marvel would do something like this, and that Gaiman would be all about it. Lastly, Marvel has dated a couple of mystery films for the next few years. May 6th, 2016, and May 5th, 2017 are dates for whatever those movies are going to be. My thought is that they're probably going to be a Doctor Strange movie, and the other one probably Black Panther. But you know, if Marvel follows their usual path, there will be two movies in each of those years. So it's possible that these could just be sequels to Thor or Captain America or Guardians of the Galaxy. Probably not Iron Man. I think we're done with Iron Man. I think we've seen the last of Iron Man solo movies. But it sounds like Marvel is already moving forward. It's not going to be the Avengers 2. That comes out in 2015. It's not going to be Ant-Man. That also comes out in 2015. So it's looking like Black Panther or Doctor Strange for those two dates. But it could be something totally new. And I'm expecting that in a month, when Comic-Con hits, and I will be there, Marvel is going to make some big announcements. So, you know, stay tuned to Punch Drunk Critics and stay tuned to this show, you know, to find out more. But that's what it looks like, man. I'm expecting Doctor Strange and Black Panther. I wish it was Power Man and Iron Fist, but it's not going to be that. Not for a little while, anyway. Not for a little while. So we'll see what happens there. All right, so that is pretty much all the news I had for the week. It was, like I said, a busy week, but you know, we got you through it in 10 minutes, right? Yeah, good. All right, so there's the music. That means we are getting out of here. I want to thank Leslie Combamale and Molly Dedham for joining me on today's show. Talk about Man of Steel. We talked about that for 30 minutes, y'all. That was great. That was a lot of fun. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. You can find me every single day at punchdrunkcritics.com and examiner.com. You can also find me on Sunday mornings on the Punch Drunk podcast. And if you're in the D.C. area, on Channel 26, WETA, on Around Town. You have a lot of great movies to choose from this week. Obviously, Man of Steel is tops on that list, along with This is the End, hilarious film, hilarious. And I would also say go check out The Kings of Summer if you haven't already done it. It is gone national now, so it should be in your town somewhere. That's pretty much it. I hope to see you again here next week, where I will be talking to Israel Brassard, the star of the new film The Bling Ring, which also features Emma Watson. We'll be talking to him on next week's show. We'll also be talking World War Z and Monsters University. So yeah, it's going to be another big week. Big week. I hope to see you there. Thank you for joining me. It's been great as always. Bye.